Hello and welcome to VG Club. My name is Dexter23 Jack, otherwise known as Paul slash Viv. And today joining me is Marcus.
Hi, y'all. It's Cool Luck on Twitter.
Javi.
Hello, it's obviously on Twitter.
And Chris.
That's me. It's a Kriya9 on Twitter.
And today we are going to be discussing Death Stranding, Kojima's masterpiece.
Oh yeah.
Question mark.
Those are
Yes,
strong
very
words there.
quite. Yeah, I think question mark definitely right after that. No, but where do we want to get started? What's your guys' history with Kojima games? I mean, I know Javi's a huge Metal Gear Solid stan, but
Guilty.
I like Metal Gear.
Even survive?
No. I didn't play that one, but also not a Kojima game. So, I mean, I played all the mainline Metal Gear games. I haven't dived into the like, what is it like, Metal Gear Acid, and what's the other one? Peace Walker? Is that the PSP game?
Yeah, although I would argue, even though it doesn't have a number, Peace Walker might as well be one of the mainline ones. It's
Yeah,
kind of unskippable.
it's not on a primary console. I have it. I just haven't ever actually got into it. So,
It's on the collection, so if you ever get the Metal Gear Solid collection, it's there with two and three, I believe.
yeah,
Yep.
that's where I got it.
Yeah, I still need to play Peace Walker as well, but I've played Metal Gear Solid 1 through 4. I haven't touched 5 yet.
I will say, don't if you can play Peace Walker on that collection on a console, because that extra right analog stick to be able to turn the camera is clutch.
I bet.
You don't want to. I don't know if it uses this, but the claw controls, like for Monster Hunter, give yourself early arthritis.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I did play it on PSP. I had a PSP Go, one of those really
Oh
thin
yeah,
ones.
that would have been real. I had one of those too, Javi, and I can't imagine playing it like that.
It was not great, but yeah.
I've only touched Metal Gear Solid 3. Well, I beat Metal Gear Solid 3, and then I played through a chunk of 5. So my exposure to the series is a little, piecemeal. Oh, and I guess Ground Zeroes, if you count going through that with 5.
Sure.
And then, I mean, before Metal Gear, well, before Metal Gear Solid, there was the original Metal Gear games, and then he did Snatcher and Police Knots. So,
What was the mech game he did on?
Zone of the Enders.
Yes, that one
It
was
was
fun.
PS2. Yeah.
Get that MGS2 demo with Zone of the Enders.
Yes, that's why I did. And I'm like, and it's like, hey, this game is actually really fun.
Yep.
I mean, that's how they sold, what is it, Dragon Quest VIII. They're like, you can play the Final Fantasy XII demo. Please buy this, please.
Yeah. Well, my history with Kojima stuff is, I played the MGS1 demo on like a PSM demo disc, and it blew my mind. I was at a friend's house and fell in love with that. I mean, long story short, MGS1 is still one of my favorite games of all time. I followed the series ever since. I have a Metal Gear tattoo. I'm a big Metal Gear guy, but I do have my issues with the series, and I don't. I think that Kojima's super, super hardcore fans are a little bit over the top with how they speak about his work. I think that there's plenty to criticize. I think there's a lot that I would do differently.
Jeff Keighley.
Yeah, but I think that Death Stranding is the first time he's truly been free to do whatever he wanted to do, and I think this is very much the game he wanted to make. And yeah, I think it's really unique. I don't think there's anything quite like it out there. I think it's great. I love it. But I totally, totally understand like where people are coming from when they don't like it.
Yeah, so with that said, let's go ahead and get into the story. I think the this is actually the thing I was probably most positive about with the game. I mean, it's a crazy ass story, but I enjoyed it. Like, every time I got to a cutscene or a new bit of story, I felt like I was being rewarded. And it's kind of a shame. I think the only thing I'd have to say about it is a lot of the, like, non-main character, like, development dialogue is told through, like, emails. So, like, if you don't read those emails, you don't get that.
Yeah. So there's some good stuff in there, too.
Yeah, for sure.
The guy complaining about his wife, and then the wife leaves him, and he has to go get him back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the individual character development that's going on in those emails, but then also just generally the lore about the world around you, and like getting that extra context goes such a long way that I think you're missing a big chunk of what makes that game like really work if you're not reading those.
I could see that. Yeah, and then go ahead, Chris.
No, I said I could see that.
And then I guess another complaint I had was, and I think when I mentioned this on Twitter or in the chats, somebody brought up that this was the same case with, you know, Snake from Metal Gear Solid, but it felt like Norman Reedus's character, Sam Porter Bridges, was continuously like talked at. Like, I felt like he didn't really have much of a personality of his own. He's yeah. just like, I guess he kind of just stayed with that like fuck America kind of attitude for most of the game, and kind of ended the game on that note.
I mean you can argue that that's a problem or a thing where the character is just not that developed and you'd want more from them. I think that's fair, but him being kind of super reserved and only really showing much emotion or like, you know, giving a shit about anything when it comes to BB, I think that makes that much more impactful. And like the end of the game, just, you know, the especially when you're walking up to the spoilers apparently, sorry, but when you're going to the incinerator and you're going to be, you know, incinerating BB, and then he tries out one more time to see if he can wake it up, like that all totally works for me. And I think a big part of why this game resonates with me is because I kind of play it not how I typically play games. I do a lot of RP, role playing, where I will sit down on a cliff when I'm somewhere beautiful and like let Sam take a nap. Like, I'll have him go to sleep and then I'll go make a sandwich or something and let the game run for like a good 15 minutes so he can get some rest. And then I'll pull out the harmonica and play a song for BB and try to grow their bond. Like, all that stuff really, really worked for me. And again, like, I totally get why someone would be like, I'm not going to do that. Like, there's not even, like, a system in the game that necessarily will reward you for doing that, you know? But it's just, like, personally, I really, that worked for me to kind of, like, get invested in what's going on and care for the characters. And so I guess what I'm saying, though, is, like, Sam being kind of a blank slate really worked for me to project kind of what I think he's feeling, I guess.
Right, and it, I mean, yeah, I think I agree with Javi there, where I think a lot of this is very intentional in Kojima's part, the way he wrote Sam, you know, because there's the greater themes of you know, people coming together and growing that bond and the dangers of isolation, and Sam was very much a, you know, here's the big example of that, of someone who's just completely isolated, and yet even though he is like, as part of his job, sort of connecting people even before like the main game starts, like with what he's doing, he's providing services to people, he's still very reserved. And so mm-hmm. to have people just sort of talk to him and he not doing a lot of input on his side of things, and you know, people are talking at him, felt pretty much in line with sort of the kind of dude he came across as. So you know, yeah, maybe it would be better to have more personality shown throughout more of the game, because there are some cutscenes where you do get a little bit more of Sam in there. I don't think that it seemed out of character for that to happen.
Yeah, actually, yesterday Rachel asked me, like, she's like, I think that Norman Reedus is okay, but I don't think he's very charismatic. Like, who would you cast if you had, you know, carte blanche to be Sam, to replace him? And as I thought about my answer, I'm like, you know, no matter who I would suggest, it's going to bring something to the character that wasn't there before. You know, it's gonna add something that Sam isn't, I guess. So I think that it's perfect as is for being what it is. I think it works for me. I think where there is an issue, though, is when the story gets really out there and you have, like, Amelie or Bridget saying, you know, really weird stuff, and Sam's just kind of, like, blank-faced, not really reacting. That can be kind of frustrating or, I don't know, hard to relate to, I guess. But Metal Gear has suffered from that as well, especially in the latest version, MGS5. I think this is just kind of a trend that Kojima is going down. Snake wasn't always the super silent protagonist. Like, in MGS 1 and 2, he was a lot more vocal.
Which is kind of funny, because they're the ones I have the most affinity for. Like, Snake was a character, you're playing as him. I did not, like, Metal Gear Solid 5 is maybe the best playing Metal Gear that he's ever made. But, like, it did not carry me in terms of, like, characters and story. And and some of that here, like, I do think that there are stronger secondary characters and surrounding Sam that, like, I enjoyed this far more than I enjoyed Metal Gear Solid 5.
Sam.
I guess my problem is I kind of posted a comic in the links that kind of summarizes my problem, but I always felt like, despite, you know, kind of Sam kind of being, I don't want to say Blake Slate, but, you know, being very reserved, I felt like he never said a word to these folks, and yet, you know, it still convinced them to join it. And I felt like it was kind of just a process of being like, I don't know if I want to join the UA. And then it would be like them talking themselves into joining the UA. It felt like Sam didn't even need to do much work. So I felt like there was just this weird disconnect there. It's just like, I felt like in order to be doing this, in addition to his actions, I felt like he needed to have some sort of charisma, but it ended up, you know, these people being like, okay, I guess we need other people to survive. Join America.
I don't know. I think that him not needing to have a silver tongue and basically just in through action showing these people by completing these deliveries and all sorts of other tasks, that shows that, like, hey, if we're all working together, we can share chiral plans, you can print stuff out, we can kind of share ideas and inventions and all this stuff. Like, he just kind of, like, made it very clear to these people, like, how their lives could be enriched if we all work together. I don't know. That works for me, in that, like, you don't have to literally say that out loud. Although I think the game kind of does in a lot of instances, but at least Sam doesn't. All right, I think it works for me that, like, you through you making these deliveries and stuff, you're kind of opening their eyes to, like, wait a minute, life's way better when we're all kind of sharing the pot.
Right. I mean, I felt he didn't. He didn't believe in you know, the concept of America as presented in the game and really the mission. He was, you know, sort of weirdly tricked into doing it in a sort of way.
Kind of
that,
guilted,
like,
into it.
Yeah, hey, like, you're, hey, your sister's on the West Coast, you got to go get her. And, hey, while you're there, like, how about you bring these keys and set everything up for us?
Exactly. Oh yeah, and you're pretty much responsible for your mother dying in your arms, and you would like you wouldn't even grant her last wish. God, like literally, from life support, and she's like dying in his arms, and I was just like, "Ooh, well, that is like the ultimate guilt trip."
Given the revelation of who she actually was and what she was responsible for, I'm curious what his upbringing was actually like. You know, they don't really get into that, but was she a good mother? Was he right to be like, I don't want anything to do with you people? Like, I'm curious about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess they really don't go into it, but his, like, kind of detached view of her at the beginning was, I mean, there was certainly a strained relationship there. So,
oh, yeah.
Speech.
Yeah.
With your mom, who's the president of the United States.
That's who's so also your sister.
Silly. Yep. Yep.
Well, who she's told you was your sister. Like, it's so weird. Yeah, the one thing that I kind of would complain about with the people that you're connecting is that you talk to a lot of them just in that hologram thing, and evidently they're like hiding in a behind a door, like right on the other side. Like they can't come out and get their damn package from you. Like, all right, well, good, thanks, man. I'm not coming out there.
I mean, it's strange, right? Because they behave as if there's like some virus out there, but what they're actually afraid of is BTs and Timefall, right? So there's no reason to like not want to be exposed to another person,
right?
Maybe the implication, I guess, is that Kojima's trying to make there is that like if you isolate enough, then you will fear interaction, like true interaction with other people, if you spend too much time inside. I think that works, but it is weird. The first time you see somebody like peek out from behind the bunker door, it's like jarring.
Right. It's like, wait, they've been there the whole time? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Because for the beginning portion of it, I really thought maybe like I'm in some sort of simulation.
Sure. Yeah. Like, are these people even real? They're all holograms.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you get to carry a living body from.
More than once.
Yeah.
That's an amusing time.
I've been really playing around with all the gadgets this time, like really making an effort to try all the things that they put in the game. I love snowboarding down the like when you put one of those wagons down and you can just jump on it. Oh, it's so much fun. Like climb like the tallest mountain and then just ride it down. And you can connect a second one to your back, so you can like pull all your cargo behind you and just try not to biff.
I can see how like I got to a point where I was just like, I don't care about building any of this, like, because getting the materials is tedious. But yeah, I could definitely see where, like, you know, playing around with all the tools they give you could be really cool, because I mean, there's some real cool combinations, and the, you know, for what it's worth, the physics in the game are like really like dynamic and interesting.
I would say, except for with the vehicles, how they interact with the land, like it does not make sense.
They're weird.
Your motorcycle gets caught on like little snags that don't make any sense. I wish that they worked a little harder on the physics with the vehicles. That would have been huge.
I appreciate them bring jumps on the vehicles to sort of get around that.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a godsend. I guess like what was it? There's like a first prepper. I don't know if everybody got there, but I remember every time I had to go down from him, I would end up like snowboarding. But it just like I wanted it to work kind of like Breath of the Wild's like shield sledding, but it never quite worked that way. So I felt like I was always biffing.
Ironically, I could never get Breath of the Wild surfing to work for me. Like, it just I couldn't get it to work. I don't know. that's funny.
But yeah, I think mechanic wise, I think the funnest thing about this game was the zip lines.
Like, oh man, yeah.
It was kind of a pain to get. It could be a little bit of a pain to get them set up and getting the materials to them so you can keep them from degrading from the timefall. But I mean, just the feeling of like zooming across like the Rocky Mountains, like, you know, going from, I don't know, Montana all the way to like Colorado in just like 3 or 4 minutes. I don't know, there was something just great about that.
Yeah.
Especially if somebody's had to make, I don't know, like, I live in New Mexico, so having to make that 6-hour drive to up to Colorado because my parents live up there. Yeah, it's a bitch. So kind of just having that, you know, fantasy of being able to get to places in less than 5 minutes was great.
How do you guys interpret what, like, the map actually is? Because in my brain, it's fake. Like, you know how, like, when you add another thing to the network, it shows a map of the United States as we know it.
Yeah.
And then, like, puts a little star on there. I think that that is just almost propaganda in the game's universe to kind of be like, this is America. We're bringing it back. Remember America? I think that it's a lie. Like, this is not the landmass that they're saying it is. It's actually the amount of land that Sam is really literally walking on. Like, I don't buy that it is actually that distance just condensed for a game's purposes.
Well, I think the map doesn't really betray, like, there's these, like, you know, these craters everywhere across the United States, because of course when the timefall started happening, the BTs, people dying, you know, cities exploding.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's implied, but they never really illustrate, like, how many, like, craters probably litter the entire United States.
If a crater could happen every time someone dies, theoretically, like, who knows how many explosions there were, right?
Yeah, so, I guess from my point, you could view it from a, you know, lack of resources from a development point of view, being like, okay, they had a, you know, they only had so much space to, they only had so many resources to work in, so they made an arguably really big map, but, you know, I'm honestly glad they didn't make, you know, this wasn't like Trucker Simulator or, you know, Microsoft Flight Simulator, because, like, navigating the countryside doing, like, by foot, that would be a nightmare.
What was that Ubisoft racing game? The crew? Yeah. I kind of view it like that. Like, it's like a condensed version.
Interesting.
But we don't really get to see.
So you think it actually is Sam walking from the East Coast to the West Coast?
I think that's what I did not think of, like, the propaganda angle of it. That's interesting.
I mean, I guess that's a loaded word, but I think there's just no way that the map is still intact like that.
Right.
I don't know. I think that's, like, ludicrous. And also, they're calling it the United Cities of America, not the United States of America. So, like, to me, that implies it's on a much, much smaller scale, and they're just adopting the aesthetic of America.
Yeah, like, we're really just, like, walking across, like, Pennsylvania as opposed to...
Sure.
I could see that. Like, it's certainly possible. Or maybe, like, you know, a condensed area of mountainous and like one of the Great Lakes, maybe like over by like Chicago, over through Montana or something like that, maybe.
Sure.
But then wouldn't Amelie's whole deal, her whole, I guess, plan not fit then if the point was to connect everything? Although, again, why is it only America that this is happening in? But regardless of that question, you know, if you're trying to connect everyone to take them all down at once, then it'd be a little strange if it's actually, no, this is only like a tri-state area sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I also had another, like, I was also thinking of another reason why the map might have been designed this way. I mean, Kojima is obviously a Japanese developer, and I think a lot of people who, you know, don't live in the United States or have traveled across parts of the United States don't realize how big it is. So I was kind of taking it from that point of view. Like, maybe Kojima thinks, obviously not that small, but they, I think maybe traveling around America's, it's a lot easier. It takes less time than what people over here would expect it.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, they don't quite understand the scope of what the United States is. Like, it's really like 50 small countries. Like Pennsylvania is like, you know, bigger than, it's like the size of France or something like that, right? Or New York's like the size of France and or Germany, whereas, you know, it for them it's like, oh, you know, Germany is x big and I can drive to another country here, whereas like for me to drive to Javi it would take multiple days.
Yeah, I mean ultimately, this conversation is just a fun, yeah, you know, exercise trying to like decipher this. But I do think that there is like the it was very intentional to not call them the USA and call it the UCA, you know, the cities of America. I think that was to address the very small scale of this operation.
Well,
but
I also think some of it is so like government. It seems like maybe like more localized government has, like on the state level, may have like disintegrated.
Sure.
And Bridget is like she's holding on in like a weird way. Like she's not really in charge of anybody because none of these people like necessarily follow her lead. They're rejoining this UCA, so it could, yeah, just be like, you know, cities are, you're gonna have local, not warlords, but you're gonna have like people that are kind of covering over like Detroit as opposed to all of Michigan.
Yeah, it also doesn't necessarily make much sense if it's this big that like there's just two factions. I mean, I get, obviously there's all these displaced people in their bunkers, but like the idea that you have the Bridges side, I guess Fragile is its own thing, but then also the mules are just the terrorists across the entire land. There's no other, like, realistically this would be a lot more like The Last of Us, where you have like a bunch of different gangs like across, yeah, the land. But
yeah, for some reason, I thought when we got to Itchnot City that we would be like kind of sneaking past like a camp of terrorists who might have set up base there. But you get there and it's just like a complete wasteland. And you're just like, oh, the only people that are here are Amelie and Higgs. Yeah. Because I love Higgs, that guy. Most amazing character.
It's weirdly like every other city here. It's just we had to go across this giant tar sea to get there.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, speaking of which, how many of you guys had to look up how to get across that tar? Oh,
I kept trying to swim. Like, this isn't working. The hell.
Well, I thought at first, like, oh, okay, maybe I can use the hover. I can,
yep,
use like the hoverboard. But I just, mm-hmm, like, and then I think I sank, and I was just like, okay, I guess this is Back to the Future rules. We can't, you know, use the hoverboard on water.
Unless you got power.
Wasn't there like a letter or an email or something where it just someone literally told you? And I don't think it was one of,
yeah,
the
paper. There is something that points you, because like, it's not too far from where you set up that final connection. It is kind of like if you go over this way, like you'll see something. And but I never try to get like captured by the BTs, so it wouldn't be like, oh, I'm gonna get captured to drag me out to the giant whale monster thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a moment where I could have discovered it by accident, because, you know, of course, when you're driving the reverse tricycle, mm-hmm, through like BT areas, sometimes you'll be like, okay, I'm avoiding everybody, and then you'll run into like a BT and get like swarmed down, but you have a chance to escape. And I escaped, and then I was just like, okay, what the hell am I supposed to be doing? And then I was like, oh, I should have let myself get captured.
In regards to, you know, the last area looking like every other area, I think that this game was made very quickly and very efficiently. That works both to its detriment and I think as a benefit in terms of like what the story is and like the fact that every bunker is almost identical. The hologram system is the same. The sound effects are all the same. It must have been really easy to scale this game up. And I think that Kojima, especially once he got to Peace Walker, Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, it's very clear that he fell in love with designing games this way, where there's tons of menus upon menus. And in every game he's made since Peace Walker, there's also you'll unlock a little automated side thing. In Death Stranding, it's where you can send the bots to do deliveries for you. In Peace Walker, you would select troops from your battalion to go do little skirmishes here and there, and you get some GDP or whatever from it. But he's fallen in love with this idea of like just loads of menus and loads of objectives to like tick off, you know. I don't know if that's my favorite thing in a Metal Gear game, but for Death Stranding, I think it was a really effective way to flesh out a game. I definitely hear you if you're going to argue that there's way too much padding. There's way too much going back and forth, especially at the end when it asks you to go all the way back. but I do think that it was an effective, efficient way to put this game together in like 2 years. Like he left Konami and this game, he had the trailers and everything. Man, this is like 5-6 years out, and it came out like 2 years later. I think that's how they did it.
And just checking, Javi, you obviously played it closer to launch. What about you, Marcus and Chris?
Yeah, so I had played it a touch near launch because it was on when Redbox still did video games. Remember that old thing? I had rented it for a week and then went through a bit of it and then didn't touch it for a while. We ended up buying it on sale for $20 a couple months after that. I played a little bit more. But thankfully, I didn't put too much time into it because then when I went to play it on PS5, my save was gone. So I sort of replayed everything I had done up to that point. Luckily, a lot of it was just the cutscenes that you can skip. So I took out a whole, 4 hours at the beginning of the game for that. But then I just played it for the first time all the way through here for this conversation.
Yeah, so
yeah, I guess. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I similar to Marcus. Like I got it at launch, and I played through that intro part where you take your mom's body to the incinerator, and then a little bit past that, maybe to like the first the connecting the first big what were they distribution centers. I think that was probably where I dropped off. I mean, it came out amongst a bunch of other games. It came out holiday, so it was trying to play a bunch of stuff, and I just never got back to it. So returning to it, for this, I just restarted everything.
Yeah, I guess the reason why I asked was when you guys initially played, did you run into like any glitches?
I can't think of any glitches, but one thing to note of the difference between playing this game in 2021 and playing it at launch is that you can skip every cutscene.
God, you weren't able to do that at first?
In the private room, every time you showered, went number one, went number two, did anything, drank a monster energy drink, you had to watch the whole animation every single time.
Yeah, I thought I had remembered like not being able to skip them.
Yeah,
but I was like, guess my memory was off because I'm totally able to just flash by this now by pressing a couple buttons.
Yeah,
I thought that was PS5 gracing me with that. I didn't realize that wasn't an option before.
Yeah, it was kind of nice. They listened to the community and patched a bunch of quality of life stuff in there, like the Udra deck. Before, you didn't go semi-transparent if the Udra deck was if you were in between the thing. Before, you had to always kind of babysit the camera to see where it's pointing. Now you can see through yourself. You can also turn off the cutscene that says, hey, you're in BT area, and it stops everything. Like, before you had to watch that whole thing every time, now you can turn it off.
Nice. Yeah, and I definitely think I did that, or at least I did it where it's, it just does it the first time.
Right.
Yeah, because for me it's good to know, but yeah, it was definitely a hassle when it popped up all the time.
It's really, really, really silly. Like, why would you want that on every time? Because once you enter BT area, yeah, it doesn't play that cutscene anymore, but it'll stop you and it'll make the noise. And you know what I mean? It's not like you're going to haphazardly walk into one of those areas and not realize it. Also, your Aldra deck's going to be like clacking like a maniac, so it's really unnecessary to have that cutscene.
Yeah, no, I think after 3 or 4 hours, I was just like, yep, I've had enough of this.
Also, I can't believe you played this on hard. That was unnecessary and probably made it a much worse experience, I would imagine.
It wasn't that much more difficult. It was just more that, I don't know, when you fell down or got damaged, your cargo would suffer more damage. BB would get more annoyed, that sort of stuff. So, I mean, like, the deliveries themselves weren't too bad, especially after you had highways and zip lines set up. That was probably the easiest part.
Yeah, but I mean, even on normal, like, mistakes happen. You saw my clip I put up last night where I just drove off a cliff and all my shit exploded all over the place. Like, I think, like, making it a little harder on myself would not make it more fun for me, at least.
But, manually saved a lot. Like, I would literally go into, like, BT or mule territory and be like, oh, shit, I need to save. And it wouldn't let me save. So I'd, like, run back a couple of, like, a mile back just to save and then run yeah. back. So if I did die, I could just reload that save, lickety-split.
That's fair. The save system's pretty generous, too. Like, if you load the latest save, you could always... It's, like, basically the latest outpost that you visited. So, usually, there's a pretty recent save in there.
Yeah, and I guess the reason why I brought up that conversation initially about, like, the glitches and stuff is, like, you know, for a game that was assembled within 2 years, has this huge open world... I mean, I think it's impressive that it actually doesn't have more bugs. I ran into a couple myself, as well as Chris, I believe. Like, I had a package that literally fell through the floor, and I had to restart the mission. I thought I was going crazy. I kept reloading the save over and over, and eventually I just had to redo it, and I finally got the package to its location. But, what was it? I think Chris got stuck in a death loop.
Yeah, I got it was pretty nasty. Going to is it the it's one of the ones in the mountain region.
The musician or no? This is the second part of the map.
I think it's lower down actually. There's like a scientist or somebody that she has like a little area with multiple buildings down there. And I was climbing up from one of the other locations. Like, I had dropped off packages for that person and was moving over here. And I was kind of out of supplies. and I used the rope to go down a little bit. And I was like, oh, I can jump onto this. I can, like, drop down onto this, like, ledge. And then I should be good to climb down. And it was a little too far. So when it dropped me, like, he died. And then it would spawn me back up, but not like where the rope was, kind of like on another ledge, which would just instantly drop me again. So I was just in this like loop of dropping and dying. So I had to go back like a little bit further.
And redo that
delivery.
Yeah. That's really funny about the package falling through the floor. Like, if that happened to me and I didn't see it happen, like, I can't tell you how many times I'm, like, looking at my orders and there's, like, one or two where I'm like, what is that? And that is not in my truck. That's not on my back. The last few outposts that I've left, I'm checking the lockers and the packages aren't in there, and I'm like, man, I just gotta cancel that. I have no idea where those packages are. So that's probably what I would have assumed if one of my packages fell through the floor, that I just like misplaced it somewhere along the way.
Yeah,
you can cancel.
Oh, dang. Yeah, because I did something similar too. I had two missions where I threw them in a private locker because I knew I was about to do something story related, and I imagined that, you know, it might have gotten fucked up by somebody for that. But never could go back and find it. And so it was always just those two orders sitting on my screen, just nagging at me the whole game.
Yeah. Like, when you press start and you can go to your cargo, before you do that, underneath there's the orders menu, and I think you can click on them and either reorder the delivery materials or just cancel it outright.
Dang, that would have been good to know. I guess go ahead.
I had one of the community quests, like, please deliver a climbing rope to the way station north of, I don't know, Mountain Knot City for like half the game, and I didn't know about the canceling thing until it was too late.
Well, I bet that nagged at you the entire time, Paul.
Yeah, fortunately, I was like, okay, I already took care of one of these, so I got the trophy for it, so I can ignore it, but... you were saying, Marcus, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I was just going to ask, you know, because we had touched on the story a little bit earlier, maybe Javi can give us a rundown of the story, since he's gone through it a few times.
Oh, boy. I mean, here's the deal. I was about to say, I find it interesting that I think Paul said that the story is maybe his favorite part of the game. Because to me, I appreciate the story, but it's a little too convoluted. Like I was afraid you'd ask me to do this, because there's a lot, and there's a lot that I know I don't understand fully.
I can go ahead and give the rundown. I mean, I know you have more expertise, but it's fresher in my head. Okay.
Go ahead.
So basically, the game picks up in the near future after the Death Stranding, which that was another thing. Like, I felt like sometimes you would have to look up like terminology and go to interviews and be like, okay, that's what it really means. But yeah, basically, BTs arriving, time fall, people exploding when they die. After you've been living in this period for like 30 years, coincidentally, Norman Reedus's character is about 30 years old. And basically, you pick up, you've been delivering packages for 10 years, and you're delivering a package, and you find out like a body is almost is going to explode, and you guys are racing to get it to a incinerator before it does. But then Higgs and some BTs stop you. It blows up, and you and BB are the only survivors of that. And then you wake up in the Capital Knot City. This might be too long, so please cut me off. You wake up. You've got a colorful cast of characters. They're all like, "Hey, we're trying to expand the United States of America. Your mom's the president. Go dispose of her body, and then we're gonna need you to set up internet for the entire country and deliver packages." So you do that. You find out some stuff about Fragile Express and the terrorists, the mules along the way, and work your way across America until you can reach your sister on the West Coast. You get there, and for a second, you know, you feel like, okay, I solved everything with Higgs. I solved everything with the sister. You think everything's okay, but then you're like, oh. Further shit is going down, and you find out that your sister is an extinction entity, meaning she's kind of like the catalyst for the catalyst for a huge extinction, which has happened 5 times before. And at the end of the game, you essentially team up with everybody to kind of try to stop her and give Earth a little bit more time. And yeah, basically There's so much, like, you know, the nature of the beach, the afterlife, the rules, and how it works. There's so much I'm leaving out there. And then the game ends with you connecting the United Cities of America, Sam taking off to quote unquote dispose of BB, but instead he incinerates his cuffs and resuscitates BB, which we find out is Louise. And you find out the BB's memories that you've been experiencing were yours because you were one of the first BB babies.
BB babies.
Beanie babies, yeah. No.
I like how, like, in your description there, Paul, you just kind of like, and your mom is the president, because that's exactly how the game does it. Yeah, it's like, what exactly. The fuck?
Like, wait, what?
It's like, I'm like out here risking my life dragging packages across this terrain, and my mom is the most powerful person in this world. Like, what the hell is going on?
No, and you, like, you have to, like, read, like, you eventually find out that Sam had a relationship with his therapist and eventually knocked her up, and then the therapist, like, I had to read this online, the therapist actually killed herself because she was suffering from doom syndromes, and basically nobody was able to find their body in time, so they blamed Sam. So Sam was kind of like outcasted for 10 years, and that's kind of why he's partially why he's kind of like, you know, fuck America, because but it's also because he's kind of got this kind of lonely, like, attitude. He feels like the only person he can connect with is his sister. So yeah,
which
and also his,
yeah, go ahead, Hobby.
Reaction. He has his allergic reaction when anybody gets near him or touches him, where his skin gets all bumpy and red, which I think the game really wanted to illustrate at the very end, when, you know, you see Lou and him, like, holding hands and touching each other a bunch. It's like, hey, that's gone now. Like, he's ready to let people in. I thought that was pretty nice.
So, well, one, I guess we kind of skipped over the fact that his sister is also his mom. She had, like, I don't know exactly, they explain it in the game, but somehow her soul had been split from her, so it remains on the beach, not moving over, and then her physical form was there in the real world. So all that time she was kind of like doing both sides, where she's like trying to like stop it, like by stop the extinction event, but also being forced by Higgs, or she was manipulating Higgs from the beach to enact the extinction event.
From what I understand, yeah, now,
and then she's yelling at you like, why didn't you stop me? And you're like, oh god, okay. But go ahead.
From what I understand, Bridget was a real living human woman.
Yes.
And Amelie is basically the part of her that's still on the beach, but can project herself through holograms into the regular world. So, like, nobody has ever seen Amelie in person. And Bridget has kind of set this up to where it's like, oh, this is my daughter. No one ever asked questions.
Right, and, because Bridget kept aging, so...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and
so
it was...
she passed away, but Amelie was still on that beach doing her...
Yeah, magic. Like, I think the... when she was 20, she had surgery for cervical cancer, and right. Basically her she died, but of course, since she's an extinction entity, she came back to life, and her body and her soul were separated. So her body, I think it was like Ka and Ha that were the terminology right, they were yeah. using in the game. But the body stayed and was aging, whereas the soul stayed on the beach, and you kind of get a little of that with... Dead Man, because apparently he doesn't have a beach. He doesn't have a quote-unquote soul. He refers to himself as Frankenstein's monster because he's only got a body.
Yeah. I mean, so you know, what I was getting at earlier about, like, this game's story is so, like, convoluted might be too negative a term to use, but there's a lot going on here. And a lot of it is so high concept that you have to, like, bend the rules of what you are willing to, like, consider and go, okay, I guess that's what's going on. But I do appreciate Kojima's, like, brazen, like, he's like, dude, I'm going to talk about spirituality, I'm going to talk about politics, I'm going to talk about, I don't know, just the concept of life and death and what happens afterwards and what that really means. And even the extinction event, to me, feels like an exploration of, like, hey, like, climate change is coming. Right. So what are we going to do something to prevent it? Or are we going to accept our fate and let it wipe us out? You know, something similar to that, playing with that kind of concept. I love that. I love that we have a creator that, you know, not only has the ability to, like, tell stories like that and explore these kinds of themes, but that it's presented in a game that's so unusual. You know, this game was probably a really, really hard sell for Sony, and they really just probably went all in because Kojima. So it's kind of a miracle that this exists.
Yeah, I don't see how, unless you're a name creator like Kojima, that you get Sony to help you fund this, because, like, the, like, basic pitch level is dude walks across America delivering it's the postman.
You're a postman, yeah.
You're delivering Absolutely. Packages, and, oh, we're going to create, like, an intricate physics and weight system so that, you know, you have to worry about balance. And, like in the games market that we're in right now, like, I mean, that's a hard sell for gamers, like, let alone,
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, sure. We're a big major company. We'll fund you for this. Oh, and you're going to get Norman Reedus to star in it, like, and Mads Mikkelsen and
Guillermo del Toro.
You're going to get
okay.
You're going to get Churches to write an original song for it.
It's a pretty good song.
Low Roar doing the whole soundtrack. Fucking rules. no, I mean, it's funny. I have always held on to this interesting anecdote. When I was Chris, I was on your show talking about Death Stranding when it had just came out, and I was talking about how, like, you know, being this delivery guy, people talk about you like you're just, like, a legend and a lifesaver, and there's so much gratitude for just delivering a package. And I remember Jeff, who's a post office mailman, he's like, people do that. Like, people give you baked goods. They thank you. People get really excited that you're there delivering the packages. And I love that. I love hearing that, like, that's a real thing that some people do. That, like, enriches the game even more, I think. I don't know. I think
Does
that,
Jeff
and
have
also,
an exosuit?
Sorry, what was that?
Does Jeff have an exosuit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's standard issue.
How do you
gotta
think
keep
he
that
carries
battery charged?
Stuff in the cold months up in Chicago.
That's right. But yeah,
the only way he can get through the snow.
I think there's a lot. Like, I talked about climate change a second ago, but, you know, there's that piece, and I think obviously the elephant in the room is that this game came out months before COVID, months before we all, or a lot of people, ended up in a very similar situation to the people in this game, where you're stuck at home and you're relying on delivery services to, you know, bring you dinner or whatever else you might need, you know. So, like, man, this game was, like, trying to tap into a lot, but even more than it hit even closer to home than it intended to, I think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting game to play. Like, when I first played, I was like, eh, whatever, this is fine. But, like, coming back to it, you know, after 15 months of a pandemic, where for most of it, most of us have stayed inside and, you know, haven't seen family or friends, or, like, it is a very interesting game coming to it from that perspective.
Yeah. And I think that aesthetically, the game really just, you know, I think this is a good gauge for, like, will you enjoy this game or not? I think that right off the bat, after the opening cutscene, when you're walking down, picking up the couple packages that Sam dropped after, you know, wrecking his motorcycle, and then that low roar song it fades in and you're walking into Capitol, not for the first time. That is a good indicator of, like, is this working for you? Like, are you, like, really digging the vibe of this? And if not, then, yeah, you're really not going to have a good time with this game. But I think even more so, it is a similar situation when you're making it to Lake Knot for the first time. Because that is the first, like, arduous, like, this is incredibly rough terrain, and typically you're going over it with way too many supplies on your back, or not enough. Like, you didn't bring ladders or anchors, and then there's BTs just everywhere, you know, and that whole hill that you have to trek through to get to Lake Knot, and then you're rewarded with just the most spectacular view, and then one of the game's best songs starts playing as you're working your way down the mountainside. Like, that to me is like the high point of the whole game. Like, getting moments like that, especially after the arduous journey to get to that point, that's what it's all about. You know, I just love that shit. Like, for me, like, I think that's the test. Like, if however hard those moments hit for the player, that's how much they're going to enjoy playing this game, in my mind.
I guess for me, something that I don't know if we really have given the game enough credit for yet is that concept of layering. So, you know, the game starts off and you're just walking around, and that alone is something that you got to sort of get used to again. It's not a normal game where it has the same controls and really just the same, like, movement that a lot of games have. And so it teaches you that, yeah, you can fall over pretty easily here, even without anything, if you're sure. Going over the terrain wrong. And then they, you know, they put in the packages and how that sort of affects you. But then, you know, as you're going throughout the game and you get each new tool, like, each new tool fits in well, and then as you get something that goes on top of that, and they start to introduce weaponry, while I think they may go a little bit too far in the weaponry side of things, eventually. Before that, I think it's just it's unique to see a game introduce their systems in this way, where it feels earned. A lot of it feels earned, like. Yeah, it's just coming at certain milestones of the game, but it feels because you made that trek to get to that person who gave you that thing, it really feels like, hey, this is, you're doing this. Like, it's not just something that's available in the locker the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what Paul was getting at with the zip lines. What a nightmare climbing to where you want them to be and then bringing extra materials to upgrade them, you know, even more so. But once you've done that, man, like, the world's your oyster. You can just launch all over the place. And you did that. You chose where to put them. You did the work to build them. Like, it's a really rewarding system in that sense.
Or you let others do the work to do them.
Yeah.
Or that.
Because that's what I like the most.
Yeah, I mean, there are systems that on my first playthrough I did not engage with at all. So I had never opened the map, clicked on a structure and requested an upgrade, you know, and that has other people come and help you out. Like, that's the whole point of the game. And I didn't do that. Like, I think that that might be an issue with the game, that it doesn't really make that all that clear. It's like, there's so many systems that are just kind of tucked into the menu. Like, you know, you guys are talking about, you didn't know you could cancel orders. That's a problem. But yeah, I mean, the things are there. I think that the more that you take advantage of what has been offered in the game, I think the more rewarding it is. Metal Gear is similar. Like, they have so many extra little gadgets and doodads and ways that you can interact with the enemies to, like, get funny scenarios. Like, those were all handcrafted. Like, somebody decided to build that, and most players will never see it.
But... I had a I had a very love-hate relationship with this game, and everybody on this call probably knows that, but for anybody listening, like, I had some really great highs with this game. Stuff like the ziplining was amazing. Like, it was stuff like, ooh, God, if they added this to the next Breath of the Wild or a similar system, that would be amazing. But there was also just... I think it's like you said, Javi, you're saying, saying like he likes to hide a lot of stuff in the menus, you know, later you unlock the bots, but it can be very clunky. And sometimes like the controls in combination with the menus just made things like it could have been so much more streamlined. And as somebody who was trying to 100% this game and complete the entire highway system, it just drove me crazy because, like, so with the highway system in this game, basically you'll have these, like, auto pavers, and you have to deliver material to them in order to pave a certain section of the road. However, you need to bring that all from one location, so you might have all of your ceramics stored at, you know, Lake Knot City, and then you have to drive all the way across the map to Mountain Knot City to get to where the auto paver is, and it is a long drive, and you don't even have the option of making your bot carry the ceramic to the area you want to. You have to carry all of that material yourself, so that's just like so many back and forth trips. It's kind of like I don't know, with Resident Evil, like, if you put a essential quest item, like, in a box at the beginning of the mansion, and then you're like, oh, I need that for, I don't know, the caverns later on in the game, and you went to a box, and it's just like, yeah, you can store stuff in here, but no, you need to go all the way back to your the original box. It was just, it was something that, like, was very frustrating, and part of me wonders if Kojima himself made it frustrating. Like, you know, just to like kind of like communicate that delivery work is like hard, it's annoying, that sort of thing. But it just, as a player, as somebody who is trying to like complete all the pieces he set out on the board, it drove me insane to the point where like I got 115 hours into this game and I had to call it. I had to delete it off my hard drive, and I just had to be like, no more, because I was I felt like I was playing the game in an unhealthy manner, and I felt like the systems that Kojima set up kind of contributed to that, even if I'm, you know, a person who suffers from, like, OCD from the get-go.
I do wonder if some of it... I think he might have set it up that way, because I don't think it's intended for you to build everything yourself. So it's kind of reliant on who else is playing at the same time, because they can build on your on your highway. Because like I build a couple pieces of highway. I was like, oh, cool, I got the achievement. That's nice, moved on. And then the next time I logged in, like, there's like 20 more pieces that were built for me. It's like, oh, this is really cool, because now I can just drive down to the next location as opposed to, really? Like trekking it.
I felt like every single one I had to install, so I had the sense throughout the game that, okay, like, you can share like equipment like zip lines, climbing anchors, that sort of stuff, but the road is like the road is quarantined to each person's individual game, so I thought I had to take it upon my shoulders to build the entire thing, and I did. I built the entire I built it all the way up until, like, I don't know, the Colorado Plains, and then I was just at that point I was like, I don't want to go through the mountains up to Mountain Knot City. I've already got a zip line trail.
It sucks that you deleted your game, because I'm curious, if you loaded it up right now, would it just be finished?
Well, that's the thing, because, like, we've mentioned this before, the timefall mechanic, because of that structure, we're always going to deteriorate. So that was, I was afraid of putting down the game because I was afraid, like, if I returned to it, like, certain structures I had set up might have been degraded, and in fact during the last act of the game there's like constant timefall, which makes like items in certain parts of the world just disintegrate completely. So once you're done with the game, you're just like, you're looking around the environment and you're just like, oh god, everything's rotted over and destroyed.
Yeah, and you got to remember too that, like, you know, we finished the game, so we're, you know, part of, I don't know what the percentage is that actually finished it, but, you know, some people are only going to play, you know, 30%, 40% of the game. So they might be building stuff onto your highway, but, you know, if you're further on or stuff's degrading, there's less and less people to help you out. So,
yeah, that's true. I'm curious how much of it is like when you click on something and request an upgrade, how much of it is literally a player needs to see your request and go to the thing and upgrade that exact structure in the place that it's in, or if the game is kind of like, okay, so-and-so upgraded this bridge and it may not necessarily be the bridge that you requested an upgrade on, but it's going to distribute that anyways. I'm curious how that all works. Maybe it's best that it's kind of invisible.
Hidden behind the scenes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, Javi, you touched on the sort of like the global warming aspects and of the game earlier. Something I, you know, I listened to a lot of podcasts about the game after I had played it, just to see like what other people thought about it. And something that one podcast had brought up was the roads themselves sort of being a really great example of that, of like, hey, you know, the Kyrelium allows humanity to do things we weren't able to do before. So it's these, what's essentially now a natural resource and an element of the world that we're able to then take and build out things with. But then building that, and they commented on it in the game multiple times, and that's really a whole big thing of what Amelie is doing. But like, it's adding to sort of this impending doom that's approaching everyone, to the point where like the roads themselves, you see the Kyrelium like coming off of the road and going into the sky, and it's like, well, that can't be good. That's like, that's pollution. We're doing some bad stuff here.
That's a good point. I never even thought about that, but yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, like, and that effect is also above the incineration stations, and even there, they're like, oh yeah, the chiral density there is, like, it's going to attract all sorts of BTs, so I guess when I was doing this, yeah, I was like, wait, I mean, I get we're trying to connect everybody, but at the same time, it feels like we're playing with fire.
Mm-hmm.
Was it every time you connected, like, that was making the weather worse? Did I pull that out of thin air, or like, because like the further you got, the worse the storms got, and I think they comment on it a couple times where, oh, like, you know, these supercells are coming in harder.
Yeah, I was playing up until like an hour ago, and I just got to on my PlayStation version because I was playing on PC also, but. On my PlayStation version, I just got to Mama, and she basically said something like that like, she needed to upgrade your Cupid, because the more people you sign on to the network, the storms are getting more intense, and the Kyrelium is skyrocketing, so yeah. It's creating a problem. Yeah.
Speaking of Mama... Yeah. I was wondering if we were gonna touch on that in this because, you know, there's certain aspects of her chapter and really her story particularly that I like. Like, I like that whole idea of, you know, there is a bad event, I'm sure it's one of the void outs that happened, one of the Death Strandings, and she was in that accident and the baby, you know, didn't make it, but that whole concept, like, of her sort of being stuck in that one place, and it's really, you know, it's her being can't get past her own guilt for what happened, that's sort of holding
her
there.
Anchor baby.
Yeah, and so it's this thing that she's having to take care of, sort of, even though it's not like it's not really doing anything. So like, I, you know, I don't know, like I really enjoyed that part of her story. But then when they go on the flip side, when you start to get the sister involved and they start to talk about how like, oh, well, you know, they weren't really women because they didn't like both have the ability to and want to have kids. And then at the end when like she sort of gets absorbed into her sister for the heterochromia, I was like, Kojima, yeah. What are you saying here?
Yeah. I mean, a couple different things. I do want to say that it was great to see the inverse of what a BB is, right? So like a BB is you have your still mother or the mother passed away with the baby or whatever. Like you have that kind of where they're in limbo, but this is the other way around where the mother is still here, but the baby is stuck in on the beach. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, as for the whole mama and her sister situation, like in the lore, they talk about how they were conjoined twins. So like, I guess in Kojima's mind, they are a single person that was split into two, like literally. I don't think it was handled with much care.
I think he was trying to get it to like foreshadow the Amelie Bridget situation, being like, see, they were two bodies separated. I think he was trying to set up that duality thing.
Sure.
Right, but not well. He didn't set it up.
Oh no,
well.
No, no! It was done poorly. I'm just saying. I think that's what Kojima was getting at.
Yeah. As for the like whole, you don't want or can't have children. Are you a real woman? Like, get the fuck out of here. That's trash.
Yeah, kind of gave me some of the what is it? Black Widow and Black Widow and Avengers: Age of Ultron. Like, I don't know. I think Josh Whedon wrote something like there was a scene where it's like, I don't feel like a true woman because I can't have kids. So
no, she tells Bruce Banner like, you think you're the only monster because she can't have kids. Okay.
Yeah, no. And the, I don't know. I don't know if you guys ever watched this film Beer Fest.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it kind of the Loch Ness Mama storyline kind of reminded me of that, because in that film, they kill off one guy and then they bring back the same actor. It's just like, I'm his
brother.
Can
we just call you the same thing? Yeah, that's so freaking funny. Oh my god. Yep. I don't know. It's classic. It's unfortunate Kojima. Reminds me of you'll regret your words and deeds when you find out the truth about why Quiet can't wear clothes. And it's like, no, you're actually just kind of a dumbass in this one specific instance. Kind of tasteless. I don't know. Yeah. Might be a cultural thing.
Yeah, and I mean, just while we're at it, touching on the rest of the characters, I loved Guillermo del Toro's Dead Man. I think Dead Man was my favorite character.
Hmm.
I liked Mads Mikkelsen, the Danish actor. I liked him as Clifford Unger. I was definitely less high on Hartman's performance.
I didn't necessarily like Hartman's performance, but I like the character and like the story around him where he has to die like every 3 minutes.
I like the movies he's made. Sorry, Nicholas Winding Refn.
No. And I guess with him, it just kind of got on my nerves with all the, like, there's this like social media like component in this entire like game, where it's like, you know, people give you a thumbs up for delivering packages, which I get, but it's just like, you know, he would constantly be giving you like thumbs up and sometimes like a thumbs down, and it was just like, in those moments I was just like, oh god, they are being really upfront with it right now.
Oh man, I love Hartman. I think he's great. the one that I remember with the, in terms of the likes and all that, it was like stood out, was when you deliver that dude's girlfriend to him and then she She gives you a thumbs up and goes, like. Yeah, she gives you two, actually. And then Norman Reedus gives her one back. I thought that was cute. You know, that's a thing I don't really... I think there's a lot about this game that I don't truly understand, which is funny because I like it so much, but I don't. I willingly don't understand a lot of it. What is the benefit of getting likes? Is that your experience points? Is that what gets you to the next level of delivery guy? Or is it just a thing, like a score?
I think it's a score. It really doesn't mean anything besides, you know, it's tied to like it's tied to a trophy, but I think it's honestly just like a self-esteem thing, because like at first I thought, like, is this kind of like a currency? Do people, you know, buy food with likes, or something?
Yeah.
or like I thought maybe like, oh, as we're you know, upgrading our reputation, that we're gonna get access to certain things. But
I mean, that might be the case. I mean, how many times have you gotten a prompt that, like, now you can get this upgraded version of this thing, and you're not exactly sure what you did?
Yeah,
to unlock
it could
that?
Could be that. That's, yeah, it doesn't explain it very well. So I'm just like, maybe it's just because, like, I did this
got
mission,
some likes.
Or yeah, maybe I got the likes.
Yeah.
So my understanding of the likes was that, you know, oxytocin and Death Stranding, there's like some super oxytocin sort of thing where people became addicted to it. And that's really what the mules are all about, that they're like, we're going to steal your package and deliver it for the likes because we want that sweet, sweet oxy. And so I think it's just trying to materialize, like you guys mentioned, the social media aspect of things, and it's really Kojima just sort of being like, you know, hey, this stuff isn't great, like people get addicted to social media, but also it still sort of feels pretty good, right? You like it though, right?
Right. I think, yeah, I think you're dead on. Like it's obvious, it's a blatant, like, I guess trying to emulate social media, right? You can get a like on virtually every social media platform, and bringing that into the real world, and you can get likes for your physical actions in the world, and then giving the feeling that you get, that positive feeling you get when you get like a little ping on social media, giving that its own word, and having villains that are addicted to it. Like, it all sounds silly, but not that silly, unfortunately.
Yeah, the social media commentary, I think, I mean, Kojima, sometimes he's definitely not subtle with some other things, but he could have definitely been a lot more heavy-handed with it.
Yeah.
I don't know, I guess the way Hartman was doing it, like, just, like, interactions in the conversation, like, hey, you opened up to me about your dead wife and your dead kid. Yeah!
Like... but what Chris was saying, though, about his story, though, and like how that, I don't know how he happened to end up having a really super cool base that's on a lake that's in the shape of a heart, and then he has a heart condition. That's pretty lucky, man. that worked out for you. But I do like his storyline. I like the perpetual, never-ending cycle that he's stuck in. Like it's an interesting situation. like in the middle of talking to you, you'll hear the timer go off and he passes out, and the whole room is padded for him. I don't know, I thought that was clever. It was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think the performances in general, there's some that don't quite land with everybody, but you know, I think across the board, fantastic jobs by a lot of the people in the cast. Was y'all's like favorite performance? So like for me, Die Hard Man, he takes the cake.
Oh,
like
sure.
Matt Nicholson, very strong and really carried a lot of sillier things, potentially could have been very silly things, but I think Die Hard Man, you know, there near the end of the game was just like, oh, this such a strong finish to the game and such a strong performance to really carry the weight of what he was saying. I was very impressed, and I had to go and look up the actor because I was like, oh my god, what else has this guy been in?
Dude, he's to this day, like even today, he was tweeting about Die Hard Man's mask. Like, he's like a fanboy of his own character. It's really funny.
No, I mean, like, I was a big fan of Die Hard Man 2, and then I kind of fell in love with Guillermo del Toro's character. I felt like he was the only, like, well, not maybe not the only, but I loved that he was Sam's friend and was trying to help him out in any way, and I was just, I don't know.
How'd you get up on that mountain? How'd you get up there?
And it's only his likeness. It's a different voice actor who actually does Dead Man's Lines. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't Jeff Keighley either.
Okay. Okay. I'm gonna have to look this up now.
But they got Conan O'Brien somehow. No Jeff Keighley. He's like a host that appears everywhere.
He's ridiculous too.
Yeah. So weird. I mean, was that Edgar Wright or just a guy that looks like Edgar Wright in the distribution center south? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
No. Okay. Well, there's like I'm looking for celebrities everywhere. You know, you see a face.
Google says yes.
Okay, it is Edgar Wright. Okay.
Yeah.
I was saying no. I don't know.
And then Jordan Bock Roberts is the director, the film director. And if you look on the side of his bunker, there's a big gorilla because he directed Kong Skull Island.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And you have to actually deliver a big crate of gorilla figures to him.
Apparently it was Jesse Corti who provided the voice for Dead Man, but either way, I thought that character was I liked it a lot. So
yeah, he's probably my favorite too.
And before we there's one more thing I do want to say before we wrap things up. I really wish Kojima would have given you an option to have, like, I don't know, even a Walkman, an MP3 player or something, just so you could have music while you're doing packages.
Oh my gosh. You know what's the ultimate, like, insult there? This is the only game I've seen this, but you cannot use the Spotify app while you're playing this game. It blocks it. So, that's weird. But I've been, like, yeah. Last night, like, no joke, I played from, when did I start? Probably around 1 in the afternoon. So I played from 1 in the afternoon, and this was not intentional. It just turned out this way. I was listening to podcasts and just grinding away, delivering stuff, building roads, collecting materials, all that stuff. I played from 1 in the afternoon until 3 a.m. today, just listening to podcasts. And I had a freaking great time. I loved it. This is a perfect game for... I will say, if you don't have something else playing, if you're just listening to the in-game audio, it's probably like mind-numbing. Like, I think that would be really, really boring if I did what I did last night without podcasts. But
podcasts kept me sane. Oh my god.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, like, I don't even mind having to, like, earn the MP3 player, like it being a secret. Just, you know, being able to have it for, like, some of the extra stuff, especially or, you know, even, like, in the car, like, you know, having a radio or a CD player.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, and that's not even unprecedented. Like, Metal Gear Solid 4 had an iPod. You could, like, put on radios and radio stations and podcasts in that game. And even, like, your private room, you have the music player. So why not make it at least a feature in the car, if not a, like, Walkman thing?
Yeah. I think it's because the post boxes, or maybe you can just do it with a lot of the things you can build where you can make it play music.
Yes.
I will say that when I came across those that were set up like that, it was pretty like, oh, this is awesome. Like, it feels like you're by, you know, civilization again. And sure. So I get what he's going for with that. I definitely agree with you guys that, yeah, that moment was cool, but it would have been a lot cooler if I could just be listening to these things all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you would burn through that soundtrack real quick, though. There's only, like, 20 songs or so, but yeah,
fair.
I'm curious, but I mean, it sounds like we're about to wrap up. I was expecting this show to be basically the reckoning, or like where you guys just tear this game to shreds, but there hasn't been much of that. I'm curious. I want to hear your biggest gripes where did this game like really, you know, set you off, I guess?
You want to go first, Marcus?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, you haven't really heard much negative from me because I think overall I enjoyed my time with the game. I think it was pretty good. My biggest gripe would be the overall length, because so something that the game does well is, you know, even with its sort of smaller America scope, is making distance feel like distance. You know, I would do something, I thought I was like, yeah, just going to go over there across that hill and deliver this thing. It should be no time at all. And I check my phone and be like, okay, that was 15 minutes. Well, shit. So combining that and having to go back and forth to a lot of different places, I think, you know, there were times in the mountains where it's just like, okay, game, like, I've been here enough, right? Especially that moment where they take away BB, and it's just like, all right, you gotta earn BB back by doing things without him. But like, I felt like I was earning BB for a long time. Yeah. It was just like, all right, I've earned BB. I've earned a couple BBs at this point. Like, let's just get on with it. And so I think that's really the biggest issue with the game, is just it's bloated when it doesn't need to be. A much tighter experience, I think, would have still gotten all the same messages across, but be a much more enjoyable experience for the player.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I think that's my same kind of complaint with it. It's like, there's like main missions that it kind of forces you to go do that are just like busy work. And like, I get like, if you know, Javi, it sounds like you enjoyed going and doing like the side missions and you know, finding, exploring different paths and stuff. Like, I got to a point where it's just like, I just want to finish.
Sure.
I just want to, like, because
like, I get it, I get the game.
Yeah, I get it. And like, what I'm interested now is like in the resolution here of like the crazy threads that he's put through. I want to see what happens, and it's like, that seems so far away because they have me just delivering nonsense in a circle.
Yeah. It was crazy after like an entire day of grinding like that to get to the mama cutscene, and she literally says, "You're halfway there." I'm like, "Wow, okay, this is halfway." There's a lot of game left, at least at the pace that I was going, where I'm like getting all the stars in every single area, meticulously building roads and stuff to make it a lot more efficient in the future, but it's tedious in the moment. But yeah, Paul, you're gonna say something.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think my main problem with kind of the menus and the controls, I felt like they could have been a lot more streamlined. I know, like, sometimes when I was packing up for a mission, like, the number of times I would be like, okay, I've got everything, and then I'd press, like, oh, and it's like, do you want to cancel all the progress you've done? Because you have to, like, hold X, because you need to go through the vehicle menu, you have to go through the cargo menu, you have to go through the mission menu, you have to go through the mission detail menu. I just, especially when I was doing a lot of non-unique missions, some more procedural generated, like, hi, I need you to run this tar sample before it hardens over to the geologist or something like that. It would have been nice if I could just be like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, like, do it in less than 10 seconds and then just get going, because that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to, you know, like, run the delivery, get it out of the way, that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, I think
the thing is that the game, you can do that, but I imagine, because this is how I feel, if I'm not carrying at least like two or three different deliveries at a time, like, then I feel like I'm not being as efficient as I can be. So like, even though what you're saying, like, oh, delivering that before the tar hardens or whatever, like an urgent delivery, oh man, wouldn't it be like so much more ideal if like that package is the only thing strapped to your back, and then maybe a ladder or two and you know, whatever supplies you may need for that journey, and then you just go out and do it. Like that always results in like a much quicker and easier objective, I guess. Like you're gonna do it no problem. But the way my brain works, I'm like, well, you know, this other delivery is either along the way or right nearby. I don't want to have to double back to get these packages again. So I'm going to find a way to carry these also. And then this other thing. Oh, and then there's this mission where I have to go to this mule camp and grab stuff and then bring it back over here. So let's factor that in as well into my route. And then things get way more convoluted than they should be.
No, and then you have like 11 missions going at once. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's inherent, like that's the game, right? The game is kind of balancing these things and trying to not overwhelm yourself, because what happens when you do is you're going to drop some packages or trip and fall or have to very, very slowly, because you have too much weight, waddle your way back to the nearest place or abandon some stuff, you know, like, and that stuff is heartbreaking and it sucks and it doesn't feel good, but that is kind of what makes the game compelling ultimately, is like you need to be prepared for the quest ahead. And sometimes you're in over your head. Sometimes a mule camp is way more aggressive than what you've encountered before, and then you totally mess up. But I don't know. I like it.
One thing I found myself doing is sometimes I would just go in like on a reverse trike, get the items from the mule cages like while the mules are still in the camp, and then I would just like ride off, and like every time I did that, like I was humming the Indiana Jones theme in my head, like dun, 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 dun. So I mean, there was just moments like that where ultimately I think, yeah, I had some bad moments with this. It was as somebody who suffers from OCD, it kind of aggravated some elements of that. But I think Chris had a tweet about the game, and I think it kind of puts it perfectly. There's more good weird, like, what was it, Chris? It was more like there's more good weird shit in this game than bad weird shit.
Yeah. let me find it for you.
That's beautiful.
Yep. Ultimately, I think there's more good weird here than bad weird.
Nice.
So, yeah, with that, I think that's a good note to end it on. Did anybody else have something they wanted to add before we left?
I'm just curious, what do you think the director's cut is going to add, and are you going to check it out?
I don't know, and no.
There's a racetrack.
That's true. The, what's it called? The Fragile Expressway?
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
It's a good name. But I'm not upgrading to the director's cut. Well, let's see. Maybe in like, you know, 5 or 6 years, maybe I'll want to revisit it. But
sure.
Right now, I'm good for a while.
I need to put like a half, at least half a decade, if not a decade, between another playthrough. It's...
Wow.
Yeah, I have no idea what they'd add that would enticed me to come back, because it felt like it was the main narrative that was pulling me along. And I, you know, while there could be areas that are fleshed out, I don't think a director's cut's really gonna do that. I think, you know, it would need a sequel, a proper sequel, to actually make something interesting enough for me to revisit.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. This game is long and bloated, and we just played it. So yeah, I understand, like, no, I'm not gonna play it again like in a week. But I probably will.
So. All right. So that does it for the this episode of VG Club. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, Javi. Thank you, Chris. And I hope everybody who's listening to this has a wonderful day. Peace.
Bye.